This program is a production of the Reformed Forum, an organization devoted to producing and distributing Reformed theological content for a connected age. Online at reformedforum.org. This is Christ the Center, episode number 256. Today we speak with David Mathis and Jonathan Parnell from Desiring God. Hi, this is Camden Busey. I'm here in the lobby of the Hilton Hotel in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, for the annual meeting of the Evangelical Theological Society. And we've been doing some recording, and we have a wonderful opportunity to speak with some people from Desiring God. We also have with me here Jared Oliphant. Jared is regional coordinator for Westminster Theological Seminary, working out of Charlotte, North Carolina. Welcome back, Jared.
Thanks, Camden. Good to be here again.
We're also very pleased to have with us David Mathis and Jonathan Parnell. David, could you say hi and explain a little bit about your responsibilities at DG?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm executive editor at Desiring God, and what that means is two-thirds of the time I'm looking after Pastor Piper's publishing, his editorial, as well as working with the publishers on moving those books forward. I spend a third of the time working with Jonathan here and also Tony Ranke on what we call the content team, which is daily producing content for the blog and other avenues. So we do some podcasts as well and produce some ebooks, and then we have the daily blog and Facebook that we're updating.
Jonathan, what are your responsibilities?
Yeah, I do content strategy at Desiring God. I work with David and Tony Ranke, and mainly the blog is kind of the front lines, day-to-day thing that I get to work on. And then new resources, always thinking of ways we can take some of Pastor John's resources over the past 32 years and kind of repackage those and make them accessible for our readers. And so it's fun to work with, and great experience to work with David and Tony and learn a lot from these guys, look up to these guys. And so it's a joy to be at Desiring God.
I have a question about just maintaining all the media that you guys do, because there's constantly something that is maybe like a video production that's split into a few different sections for your audience. There's the blog itself. There's Theology Refresh, which I'd love to hear about and hear you explain. There's Behind the Blog podcast. So there's tons of audio going on, print content, video content.
And then all the Twitter on top of it.
Yeah, and then there's the social Facebook media aspect as well. I guess, you know, it's too general to say how do you guys keep track of that, but what's some of the strategy that you guys have behind feeding your audience and coming up with these different types of programs and media and things
just
like that?
Also, just even knowing what you have at your fingertips. And when I was working at CCEF, there's so many resources and materials. This is hard to keep track of what you have.
It's a little bit like Santa's workshop at Desiring God. One amazing thing is to have the 30 plus year reservoir of content from Pastor Piper, who we were just talking about this yesterday. As we'd put together an ebook here for Advent. We have a devotional reading for each day of the month, and those correspond with our devotional app, which is called Solid Joys, available for free in the iTunes store. And John's steady state ministry of preaching sermon week after week, writing midweek articles. Now there's been blog posts here. I think the Desiring God blog began in February of 2007. That steady stream of content has produced quite the reservoir over the years. So one amazing thing we're blessed with is that content to go deep into. And Jonathan, Tony, and I, we're all quote unquote users or beneficiaries of the content. So we're in it, we go deep in it, we love it. It's not just a job, it's something that we love and are ministered to by it, and our soul is blessed by it. So we have learned over time where some of the best resources are, where they're located, how to get in and through the content and move that around. And what we're seeking to do is to keep pushing it out. We want to spread a passion for the supremacy of God and all things for the joy of all peoples. In particular, at Desiring God, we want people everywhere to understand and embrace the truth that God is most glorified in us and we are most satisfied in Him. And so we're going to keep doing that through different avenues, different media. And one of the things we've done over the last 6-7 years is we've had a media department that has done video, that's done audio, and that we've got that stuff on site and we've produced that. Also, we've outsourced some of those things as well as continuing to produce that in writing. So day after day, we want to say the old thing again, over and over. Mm-hmm. What shall we say to these things? Let's keep saying it like Paul does in Romans 8. And that's how we go about it.
I'm curious to hear about your thoughts on just internet ministry in general. I think when I look at Desiring God, I see you gentlemen. I'm not speaking abstractly. We have actual people here in front of us as leading figures or leading voice in trying to promote theology in new media. And it's been a challenge, and it's something we've been trying to do for a few years, but definitely not as organized or skilled at it. But how do you go about strategizing and trying to advance theological discussion and get people excited here in the new media when there's so many factors that are at work now that weren't, 10, 15 years ago when it was strictly publishing and maybe, traditional radio?
One tremendous blessing is the kind of forerunners that God has put in John Piper's life, not only because of John, but despite John at certain points. So, for instance, right now we've just completed a video that we're planning to launch here in December about a bivocational pastor in New England who saw the potential for spreading the gospel through the internet back in the late 80s, early 90s, if not before then, and was pushing on John a long time ago, long before there was DesiringGod.org, was pushing on John to get content online for free just to think how that might minister to people. He talks about how amazing it is that Charlie Spurgeon's sermons are available for free and how many people benefit from them. And what if pastors just make their sermons available free? And he's talking this way 20, 25 years ago. And God puts him in John's life. And at some point, some guys came along and got Desiring God up and going, guys who don't work for Desiring God now. They're doing other things, and they just got a website up and going. And so to have forerunners like that who anticipated the potential and possibility, did that for us, and in some cases despite us, and then in Pastor Piper's own openness, I don't know, through that or whatever it is, how God's molded and shaped him, he has a sense of being open to these new media. Twitter comes along, and he gives it consideration as another opportunity, another megaphone to spread this truth that God's most glorified in us and most satisfied in him. And he leads the way in that. If it wasn't for his openness and willingness to it, we wouldn't be pressing forward and going into those new pockets as we're trying to do.
That's right. One thing we always try to keep in mind is that we're not just a website. The fact that we have a website and apps and podcasts and we're using this media, that's so subservient to what we're about. We're about spreading a passion for the supremacy of God in all things through Jesus Christ to all peoples. And so we want to leverage the media as we can, but that's just, it could be anything. It happens to be a website because that's the most effective strategic way to make Pastor John's resources accessible to the widest group of people, but that's subservient to what we're really about.
The internet has amazing potential for freeness, spreadability, accessibility. Now, it's not cheap to put up. So it's very inexpensive to be able to receive content. I mean, you can get free content on the internet. It's an amazing gift in our day for those who have put free content on the internet, and you can be blessed by that. But to put it up is not cheap. All the technology, all the staff it takes to put that up. And with very kind donors that God's given to us, we're able to meet those costs of what it takes to be on the edge technologically and with our personnel, and then make that available for free online. And many have been blessed by it because it's accessible and it's user-friendly. We want to remove every obstacle that we can. We're not asking for people to put their names and email addresses in. Just come, use the content. Don't worry about getting your credit card out. Use the content.
Exactly.
And if at some point God would move you to help give to that ministry, wonderful. But we want to make it for free. Freely we have received, freely we want to give. At least that's our calling online.
It's really, we feel like we have something that's really, really important to say. And so website, we'll take website. Mm-hmm. We'll do that.
Yeah, I had, on that, I had a question about how you guys handle the audience, how you handle the content in relation to the audience. When you're looking at media, it seems like you guys have hit a sweet spot in balancing both good theological content and things that are accessible as well. And I mean, Dr. Piper is a master at that. That's why he is where he is today. But in terms of either partnering with people, other organizations, and also just generating content, what's your approach to that tough balance between good, solid theology that's meaty and also not going over people's heads, you know, so to speak?
Some of that is we're pretty normal guys that have families and like to watch baseball, and we love the Desiring God website ourselves, and so we can be pretty simple in some ways. You know, Tony's got some serious intellectual horsepower, but the rest of us are pretty normal, and I think that normalcy helps us put the cookie on a lower shelf, not the bottom shelf. We, you know, that's not probably what we're known for, who we are, but we are seeking to make it understandable. And part of that is that's the world we live in, and that we make it understandable to ourselves and our families and our friends and our unbelieving neighbors, hopefully, even though we can probably do even better communicating in the vernacular. So I don't know that we could do it any other way. I don't know that we could, Jonathan and I and Tony, could do it at a higher level, or that we have much grace to do it at a much lower level. And this, you know, it is what we do in a lot of ways is John Piper Online. That's the main avenue we have. Our main channel is our website, what we're doing online. And our main voice is John Piper. And so to the degree that he can go up or down in understandability, it's that's kind of our range, and we've been drawn there as those who've been ministered to by him, and he really sets the tone on that. So we don't give it a whole lot of intentional thought. We're not super conscientious about it. It's kind of who we are.
Yeah, it flows out of
your
context and those sort of things.
And it's frustrating for some people that we're probably not more academically careful, and maybe it's frustrating for others that we are over their heads, but that's who we are.
Yeah, it's going to strike that balance. But I think that happens for a lot of guys that get out of seminary or guys that are in you know, an academic environment, and then they get placed in a church or they become a pastor and start to realize that it takes a lot of effort to connect with people, but once you're there in that context, working day in and day out and ministering and shepherding with people, it becomes second nature. You start to grow towards and be inclined towards communicating to your flock. And so the many years that Pastor John's been working, I mean, it's just part of who he is and making that accessible, I would imagine. It's just, but yet, I mean, he's done all the work and has all the academic accomplishments too. I mean, studying in Germany too, and being an accomplished New Testament scholar. So he's really a unique and a really gifted person in that regard to be able to swim in both waters and to bridge the gap between the two. And he was at the Greg Beale conference, or Greg was responding to criticisms of his New Testament theology, and Dr. Piper was there, sitting in the crowd and asking questions too. So you get to see him engage in the heavy horsepower, and it was really fantastic. I got some questions for you. I'm wondering about your thoughts. I mean, a bunch of you are here at ETS. Just walk us through the whole, you know, thing about coming as an organization and with John Piper as well. What do you think about in terms of covering an event like this, or what are you looking to do when you're here? Meeting people, interacting with people, recording. I mean, what are you up to at a place like, at an event like this?
We don't want to be insular, and we don't even begin to presume that we have within our own community the resources that we need for checking ourselves. And we have the Bible, praise God for the Bible, and we want to read that in community, and we want reformed voices from elsewhere. We want even non-reformed voices from elsewhere to inform how we think, to speak in, have friends here from Westminster and RTS Orlando and other RTSs and Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and others that speak in, that help us see better our weak spots. We come away sometimes more appreciative of places where we are strong, where our certain emphases are, and those can be confirmed or changed. And we want to be part of a larger community. We don't presume that our little segment of evangelicalism, little segment of the Reformed world, is the whole thing. We have a big global Christ, and there's a lot more for us to learn about him. And we're benefited we benefit from the lives of other believers outside our little pocket.
Yeah, I think we come to learn from, of course, our partnerships, like you guys. It's great to see you guys. And also the papers. We want to our development theologically as we're growing and want to learn and be aware of what's out there is important. And so to be able to check out some papers and just kind of even just see the schedule and see what's being talked about and what's important is crucial. So I think that that's behind why we want to be here and why it's been I think good for us to be here and check out what's going on and hopefully come back next year.
So speak a little bit, if you will, about the Twin Cities and how that might inform what you do. I mean, do you feed off of that? Do you find that location being advantageous? And I take it most of you are not actually originally from the Twin Cities. You come in from different places. How has that been? And what is it like to have the community and the theological camaraderie surrounding Desiring God and Bethlehem Baptist Church? I think, is that the name of the church? Yeah. Up in the Twin Cities. I'm just curious because it's really grown over the last several years into something really special.
And don't get me going on the Twin Cities too much. I love the Twin Cities. I'm originally from South Carolina. Jonathan's from North Carolina. Tony is from Nebraska. Many of us who are in our community, say Marshall Siegel's from Ohio, we have come from elsewhere because we were drawn there by Bethlehem or by the college and seminary in particular, or by Desiring God for a job. Personally, I came with Campus Outreach. I was involved with a college ministry called Campus Outreach in South Carolina and came in 2003 to expand the Campus Outreach to Bethlehem Baptist and to the University of Minnesota, and have stayed around since then. And that's right, ministering to the Golden Gophers. I married a girl from Minnesota and have planted the roots there deeply. I am not from an urban environment like Minneapolis-St. Paul. I personally draw a lot of energy from the urban environment. I think I'm an urban guy. I like being in the city. I like being in the large metro. I don't know if it relates to Desiring God or not, but there's some amazing things about the Twin Cities that makes it an especially strategic place for gospel ministry. But I won't go into all that right now. Just talk about the community at Desiring God in Bethlehem. I mean, a local community under a senior pastor, so often the pace is really set by the guy who's typically in the pulpit and is writing as a spokesman and a teacher of the community. And so even with the plurality of elders we have at Bethlehem, which is a beautiful and very strong plurality, it is amazing to see how much of a plurality it is given the strength and weight of the senior teacher. John does shape the movement. And because he's a thinker, and because he's conscientious and intentional and profoundly biblical and wants to get his thinking from biblical text, that molds and shapes the community. So there's a beautiful camaraderie in the Bethlehem and Desiring God community in terms of biblical text, the role of the Bible, the great end of the glory of God and the centrality of our joy and how God is most glorified in us when we're most satisfied in Him, that beautiful angle on the gospel, which is only an angle. We know that that's not the only thing that needs to be said, and we want to be informed by other ways of saying it and angles on it. But the way that John has set the pace in that brings a good environment for our interaction, for our motivation, for the kind of things that we're thinking on week in and week out for producing content. It's natural to us in our community to do a podcast on theology, to be producing blog posts, to do videos here and there, because it's a very content-oriented community, to use the content language.
Yeah, absolutely. I could go on about this too, as David said. It's remarkable the culture around Bethlehem that's been kind of put in place by Pastor John's influence these past 30 years, his vision of God, and people who have come to the Twin Cities because of that, been drawn to that, and we've all become friends, and we're real people, and we have families and lives, and to share that is really special. And it's one of the things that when my wife and I were thinking about getting to the end of seminary, thinking about, okay, so what's next, it was an easy decision for us in a lot of ways to say we'd love to be a part of this and what God could do here in the future.
What will be interesting to see is so Jonathan and I are 35 to 40 years younger than John, right? You're probably about 40 years younger than John. I'm 35 years younger than John. God willing, people of our generation have a lot of life to live post Piper pastorate. And it'll be interesting, what does the ecclesiological offspring of Bethlehem Baptist in the 1980 to 2012 season look like a generation from now? I don't presume it'll all be manifest in one particular local church. I think it'd be a beautiful thing. I think it'd be typical of the gospel if there are multiple, if not dozens, of manifestations of that in the Twin Cities, Metro, and beyond. And it'll be an interesting thing to see. I'm excited to see it. I'm excited to see the theology keep going deeper and to see us keep getting strong in places that were weak. Don't hear Jonathan and I talk as if we got things figured out at Bethlehem, because it is far from that. Come spend some time on the ground and come see our glaring weaknesses and flaws. So don't hear an idealism on that. There's a lot of room for growth, and yet we want to be thankful mm-hmm. for the grace that God has given us in the last generation, and what to build on as we mm-hmm. go forward. I mean, we're young fathers. If God's pleased, there's a lot of life ahead. We want to build our kids into this community and see things grow and mm-hmm. strengthen.
How has the transition gone? You're transitioning where Pastor John is not the senior pastor preaching every week, correct? I mean, and could you describe that and speak about how that might relate to Desiring God? Desiring God's its own 501c3 organization, right?
God is a wholly owned
legally
subsidiary
separate.
Of Bethlehem yeah. Baptist Church.
Yes.
Bethlehem Baptist Church owns Desiring God, places the Desiring God board. What the ongoing relationship between Bethlehem and Desiring God will be post-Piper pastorate, I'm uncertain of at this point. Mm. To this point, God has been amazingly kind in this transition. Transitions like this, you don't see the full fruit of it for years. But yet, to this point, God has been very kind to us. Mm-hmm. It could not have gone any better in the spring as Jason Meyer was candidating, as he was preaching his messages, interacting with the congregation, as there was a vote of 99%+. Mm-hmm. That was mind-boggling. We could not have anticipated that a couple years prior. And in this, too, John's heart has been amazing as he's not holding on to his, but he's giving toward the next generation. He's speaking with optimism and hope. Mm-hmm. He's empowering the next guy. He's affirming the next guy. And that has been a significant work of grace that I've seen God be doing in him, and humility that's being displayed in that. So to this point, I can't imagine it having gone any better. Mm-hmm. And we don't presume for the next 6 months or the next year. We just ask God, would you continue to be gracious on us in this transition? Pastor Piper's finishing up his final sermon series this month.
Wow.
And then Jason will become senior pastor January 1, God willing, pending a mm-hmm. vote in December.
Okay.
And then John will be officially done at Bethlehem, God willing, on Easter Sunday, March 31st, 2013.
Oh, wow. Now, just to push things a little bit, I've always been tremendously appreciative of Desiring God, been tremendously blessed by John's ministry. And we see that the Lord has blessed him tremendously and used him as a tool in so many people's lives. But a theme that's come up in the last, I don't know, couple of years, especially with Carl Truman, is this discussion on celebrity. And I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this, how you balance the clear fact that the Lord has gifted a person and that people are blessed by his ministry and you want to promote in a good and healthy way because you want to see people grow. How do you balance that with the tendencies, especially in our culture, towards making of kings and the celebrity culture? How do you prevent things from devolving into a personality cult? I don't mean to be critical or suggest that. It's something we deal with and we try to prevent. What are your thoughts from the Desiring God crew on how you do that?
Yeah, well, just to take the discussion at the given of celebrity is maybe not the way to even begin. Mm-hmm. Maybe to even challenge that assumption. I mean, Carl Truman, he's a celebrity, right? I mean,
he's the anti-celebrity celebrity.
Yeah, that's right. So if we're gonna give we're going to call that celebrity and all the connotation involved with celebrity. And Carl's as part of, much a part of that as anybody. I don't know that's the way to talk about it, or at least to form another category. Someone who did this very well is a blog post by Kevin DeYoung at the Gospel Coalition, where he talked about the difference between celebrities and heroes.
That's good.
I do think there's something to consider there. Those who have gone before us, those who have led us well, what's the reason for why we appreciate them? Are they teaching us the Bible well? Do we know Jesus more? Do we love the Scriptures more because of their lives? And can we appreciate them in a way where we know that all things are ours? We're not locked into just Apollos or just Cephas or just Paul. We're locked into Jesus. And to the extent that a plurality of teachers would help us know our Savior better, we love these men and appreciate these men. I named my son Carson because Don Carson's had a significant role in teaching me, as has John Frame, as has John Piper, and many others. And I would encourage people toward a plurality of people, teachers, that they appreciate and celebrate. And if there's a category difference here that we can carve out between those who are honored and appreciated teachers, heroes in a way, maybe even heroes is an adequate word, which is a very distinct and an even separate thing from mere celebrity pop culture.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, Pastor John received that advice early on to pick a theologian and learn as much as you can from him. And Jonathan Edwards was, of course, the person that he chose. And so I think he's modeled helpfully for those who've been influenced by him how it is that you can look at someone and appreciate what they've said, be helped by what they said, but also the Scripture is what's authoritative. And I think that's what we see in Philippians 3. This is a text that I've thought about and comes to a few times as we've talked about this idea of celebrity and hero. And the Apostle Paul says in Philippians 3 to join in imitating me and keep your eyes on those who walk according to the example you have in us. And he grounds this imperative with those who don't do this are prone to wander and into apostasy, and it's dangerous for their faith. And so as we look out at, we want to find role models or heroes, someone that we think, yeah, I want to learn as much as I can, follow this example because they follow in the apostolic example that we see in Scripture. So that's the text that's helped me most as I think about kind of this theology of role model, and as we look and want to learn from those out there.
Yeah, I think of, Dr. Piper hasn't been silent on this issue. I listened to a piece of audio that he did, I don't know if it was a year and a half, 2 years ago or something, but it was somewhat recently, and I thought it was just a great analysis. It was, he's speaking, here's where I'm coming from, this kind of thing. I've heard this before, not ignorant of it. So I thought that was very helpful. I don't know if we can point people to it. I don't remember what it's called or anything.
An episode of Theology Refresh.
Okay, great. Yeah,
Theology Refresh.
Yeah. Yeah, so go to the DG website for that, which is a great podcast anyway. But another thing that I was thinking of in this regard is the T4G panel that was going on. And I know Dr. Piper was sitting there, and it was Ligon Duncan, I think, was moderating, and Tabiti was there, and Carl was there, and I think it was Matt Chandler and David Platt. But we don't have to go on and on about this, but I was wondering if there was any reaction from him as he was listening to these kinds of things and hearing multiple voices in that context and hearing from pastors as well, especially a guy like Matt Chandler and David Platt, they have a huge following as well.
I don't remember any specific interaction after. I mean, that was back in April, so we're going on 6 months here, I guess. I don't remember anything specifically. One difference, and reason I pray for Matt and David on this, is, they have ascended so quickly. It was a lot longer haul for guys that we appreciate, like a John Piper and Tim Keller and Don Carson. And do pray for those guys. That's a tough situation to be in, to be celebrated so quickly and appreciated so quickly at such a young age. So there's differences in each of those ministries, in each of those guys. And to come back again to, I think, a healthy, humble Christian appreciation of our leaders that doesn't make them God, doesn't obscure our vision of Christ, but appreciates what of Christ that we've seen in them and because of their ministry and what effects their teaching and life have had on us. Do we love Jesus more? Do we love the Bible more? Do we love our family more and love the lost more because of them. And to that degree, I want to honor and appreciate those teachers and honor them by keeping them in the right import, that by appreciating them in the right way and not overly so.
Yeah, and not as a substitution, and nobody's saying this, but of course, you know, our listeners, we're going to get comments if I don't mention this, but appreciating the work of the local church, too.
Absolutely.
I mean, we need to have heroes at home.
Absolutely.
And to understand what ministers and elders and deacons are doing in our lives, and just everyone in fellowship at the local church level. It's so easy to go online, wherever you may go, and start to, you know, think the grass is greener elsewhere, or start to just listen elsewhere. And we need to have those heroes and learn, and it's great to have those resources accessible to us, but it should never come at the expense of what's going on at home and in our daily lives.
A good test may be how healthy your appreciation of your heroes far away is. Is do you have bigger heroes that nobody's heard of?
Yeah.
Or that very few people have heard of.
Right.
Are there heroes in your life, whether your dad or a youth minister or a disciple or a man who poured himself into your life, those who are nearby who aren't, you know, quote unquote, Christianly famous in Christian circles? Do you have heroes there too? Are there heroes near? That might be a good indication that your appreciation of the guys far away is on good footing.
Mm-hmm. What's in store for Desiring God in the near future? Do you have any plans or things you want to share or things you want to mention to our listeners?
Well, this is a very exciting season for Desiring God in that John Piper's wider ministry, which is what Desiring God is a vessel for, has kind of been on the side. He's been a full-time local church pastor, and as God has given him space and the elders and congregation have given him space, he's done wider things, writing books and doing articles and traveling to speak. And this season ahead, that's a little simpler. Like his life is going to be more oriented on the wider ministry, his vocational life. And also, he'll be 67 here in January, and there's a chance to be more at home and more with family and to have an appropriate life for a 67-year-old who's not wasting his life, who's not going to Punta Gorda, Florida to collect shells, but to invest in his kids and his grandkids and to continue to invest in the, you know, quote-unquote wider movement through Desiring God. So Desiring God and BCS, we anticipate having a little bit more of John Piper. We don't want to presume too much. We want to leave him to Noel and his family as much as is needed. And there's an excitement at Desiring God and at Bethlehem College and Seminary that those ministries are going to be beneficiaries of more time and attention because he's done with his season at Bethlehem. So things are ramping up at Desiring God, not ramping down in terms of John Piper. And in particular, we want to continue to see him write the things that he produces on the blog. The books that he writes are very helpful and very accessible. And we want to continue doing speaking and videos, but there's a kind of priority of writing. He's a writer, and he wants to do more of that in the days ahead.
Yeah, I think most immediately we have an Advent devotional coming out. Pastor John being 32 years at Bethlehem, that's a lot of Advents, a lot of Christmas sermons and messages. And so we have coming out right after Thanksgiving an e-book that's daily readings for Advent that's pulled from Pastor John's sermons over the past 30 years. So looking forward to that.
Jared?
Yeah, this is not near term, but I know Westminster is tremendously excited that he's going to be doing the Gaffin Lecture in April of 2014.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah. So mark your calendars for that and definitely get to Philadelphia because I can't wait for that. And I selfishly, I'd love to sit here and talk about Gaffin all day and the connections and things like that. But yeah, we're really excited for that. So I don't know if you guys are going to be able to join, but looking forward to it.
This is an invitation. If you guys are covering costs or anything like that, please let us know. I'd love to come along. And I don't think I've ever been to Philly. It'd be good to come visit you guys sometime.
Yeah. People can find Desiring God, of course, online at desiringgod.org. And from there, I guess you can launch into anything you need to. That's a good place for finding you know, what's going on. But David, Jonathan, I want to thank you for joining us. This has been really great. Yeah. Of course, you can find us online at reformedforum.org. There you'll find information about all of our programs. And If you'd like to get a hold of us, you can email us at mail@reformedforum.org or tweet us @reformedforum. Thanks for listening.